prayer continuation of that, how to say, impersonalism, maybe, how it can creep in. I could not call it philosophically Mayavadi impersonalism expressed and so. But again, when the members of an organization are supposed to serve the organization rather than the other way around, and it's a fairly say intense and demanding operation projects, such as it was when we were building up everything, and hardly any one of us had any practical experience with building up things and organizations and managing and all that. And most of all in planning. So generally, you were just told immediately to do something immediately and then maybe spend a long time doing it. Hardly getting any sleep. And which we weren't even allowed to see or think or speak about. They've developed a kind of impersonal cold mood, ways of treating each other among the devotees, members. Who, yes, are then called and calling each other devotees, Vaishnava devotees. But then there are the big devotees and the small devotees. The big devotees are the ones in leadership positions. Certain titles and garbs, and who have somehow or other, either by showing and proving by their own living examples, qualifications. But then what kind of qualifications are we talking about? Being good, nice devotees of God and of other devotees, which you're supposed to be if you're a devotee of God, or someone who's good dealing with management, money, this and that, or simply a good politician who managed to become popular. Now, that incentive to reach such a position is quite was quite strong, I think, because among certain, because that's that was the only way to become someone, to show yourself, to prove yourself, to, and also to not be a slave of someone else. Now, I'm using the word slave a little heavy here, but it almost went to that extreme. So here we have an organization with some leaders sitting a bit in ivory towers, and then the little devotees on, down on the floor, who, and I heard the speech as it was going on in the closed meetings among the top leaders of Scandinavia here, and I guess elsewhere too, where those little devotees were, they were treated as, you know, not really real devotees, or it could be in a very callous way. So again, that happened almost invisibly, because again, the center of everything was not, well, to some, of course it was, but organizationally, you know, the social geist and environment that was created was not so much centered around the devotees in general, that should all be happy and satisfied and be friends and support each other and so on. But it was rather about upholding and building up and improving and expanding the organization. With us as little minions, serfs, serving it. And we were expendable. And anyway, we had this eternal debt to our spiritual master and to, of course, the representatives then of the spiritual master, the temple president. No, I mean, didn't get really expressed so far. But it kind of sipped through all the way down the line, through the levels of the social structure and organization structure that had then developed. And I know, I mean, I was there, and I was mainly on that serving side, although I'm an independent person, so I managed to stay a bit on my own. Projects. Such as few of us did. But I was there on that side, and I was treated that way myself occasionally. I was in that position myself where I was simply meant to serve. serve the temple president, serve the Sangitan leader, serve the GBC representative, the guru, the regional secretary, the Swami in charge. And we saw that there was a few of those there, almost, yeah, sometimes battling about who should be the one that we serve. Because, of course, if you are in this situation, and you also have, let's say you're a temple president, whoops, here I am responsible for this big property with 50 or 100 people living there. They're depending on me, and I'm depending on them. So they are my resource, my main resource, because, well, after all, it was about serving Krishna unselfishly and without any salary and all of that, 24 hours a day. Okay, you get a little sleep, but get up there and work, work, work. That was kind of the mood. And if you are finding yourself in a leadership position, temple president we're talking about now, and you have your crew there, that could be a kind of comfortable, promising position, right? You have your team, they're working for you, you don't have to pay them salary, just give them some food and some room to live in the basement. Well, that's how it was when I was a temple president in Gothenburg. A crew down there in the basement, Brahmacharis, Brahmacharinis, and the families and grihastas, had little apartments, well, simple, but still. Well, I lived in the basement too. And but I've seen it from both sides, so to speak. I know how it is to be a temple president. I know how it is to be a servant of the temple president, or and who else? I mean, so many I've been working under. So I think I can say, to speak out of actual factual reality experience here, which I'm not doing just as an old grumpy man here, complaining about everything that is was wrong in my life, but rather I'm analyzing in order to improve. Because if we don't see what is wrong, then it's hard to remove it and change it. And what I say is wrong, it was wrong here, maybe still is, and I see it here and there. Yes, I do. And this is why I'm talking this, to be frank. That what it comes down to, all this that I'm speaking about here, is a kind of a social system, an organizational structure, institution we call it sometimes, but anyway, that stands there and requires, needs people to work for it. And they should not be paid anything. If they ask for something, some salary or whatever, even people working for non-profits, they often receive some kind of support, otherwise how they're going to eat and maintain themselves. So, but, well, in the early days you simply had to go to the temple president and ask for money for clothes or this and that, and generally, well, we brahmacharis, we're pointed to a box of old clothes so we can take something, and we dressed in very funny ways. But that's okay when you're a brahmachari, however, not when you have a family and children and all of that. So we can tell stories about this. But my point here is, and I'm using this as an example to illustrate that point, which I think is the important point here, that devotees, and I'm talking about people, not small, big, let's wait with that. People, souls, like you and me, if you are one of us, who at one point started hearing about this Bhagavad Gita and all of that, Krishna consciousness, started meditating and go to the temple, Sunday feasts, listening maybe to the radio, reading the books. And then at one point we thought, yes, this is, I believe in this. And I trust these devotees because they are speaking very good. They are right. So yes, I have to become one of them. And I will take the biggest step in my life. Oh, so God, help me, God. I will just surrender myself to this. I will give up my job, my apartment, my studies, my career, my girl or boyfriend, even my family, parents may reject me. Well, I'm even being told to reject them because they're not my real parents. And I mean, this what I'm saying now could be, and I think it was what's going on in the minds of many of us back then. And I don't know how it is now. I guess it's not so radical, but you know, and then these souls, these people, these persons, stepped into that temple, handed over everything. I did like that. Took all my belongings, gave my apartment to my old ex-girlfriend, stuffed it all in a rented van, a pickup, drove out there to New Radhakund, dumped it all on the floor, and the reception, and then went into the Brahmachari ashram with a sleeping bag. And a little bag of belongings. That was all I had now. And many with me did that, giving the best years of their lives. Of course, we didn't see them as potentially very good. So, I mean, it's not that we were always completely unselfishly just surrendering. We maybe didn't have any other way out of the mess that this material society is, was for us at least. Maybe we thought it was more messy than it was because our lives were messy. But anyway, so there you are, and from that point, such souls, such people, such persons are, of course, servants of God, Vaishnava devotees should be treated like that, with that respect. And the leader should first of all understand that important instruction. That's what Krishna is saying. If someone calls himself my devotee, he's not my devotee. But if someone calls himself a devotee, or my devotee, he's my devotee. Think about that for a little while, what it means. It's not just a fine little saying that we say on classes and we go, yeah, that sounds cool, far out. Devotee, oh my devotee, yeah. But it's, Krishna's talking reality. It's for real, it's what God says here. And if you can't accept it like that and think it's just some old folklore, then maybe you shouldn't, at least not be in a leadership position in such an organization, such a movement. But again, those in leadership positions were often not that learned. They didn't have much time to read. They had to get things working. And those brahmanas reading their books and preaching their preaching. Yeah. Intellectuals. They're a little bit remote from reality, which we managers know how to deal with. We are the real important leaders of this movement, the real followers of Prabhupada. He sent his disciples out struggling like we do. And it had to be heavy dealing sometimes because this movement has to be built up according to Prabhupada's desires. We are the real followers. They don't say it straight out, but I've been in talks with people in that position who, I promise you and I tell you, behind the screen, in their closed offices, speak like that. Maybe not sitting and bragging, all, but that attitude is there, was there. Now, that means that you can easily become a bit isolated. You sit there in your office and you have a lot of things to do. You know, I don't have time, I don't have... And then the little brahminical devotees come in. And now I don't have time. It's difficult for them to reach you. First of all, you think that they are just some sentimental philosophers. Second of all, you don't have time and you don't see them as valuable assets for you to get done what you are supposed to get done. So then it becomes like that. It can slip into that, and that thing of serving the devotees. Yeah, but you know, there are exceptions to all rules. We have to, you know, utilities to principle. We're servants of Prabhupada. Sometimes we've got to be a little heavy and so on. You can easily, actually, use a philosophy, scriptural verses and injunctions to suit your ways. And that's why it is not enough with just reading books. You have to have some wisdom and some deeper spiritual maturity. And therefore, I'm saying that this is what should be in the forefront in a Krishna consciousness movement. The friendly, well, dare I say loving, but supportive, peaceful, respectful relationships between the devotees. And I'm saying it over and over. Look at these 7 points Prabhupada made there, as you could say, the constitution of ISKCON. Two of them say that this movement is meant to bring the members closer to each other. that should be in the forefront, and therefore Krishna's words should rule, not little tricky interpretations, but something as plain as, yes, if you want to call yourself servant of me, then you have to be the servant of my devotees. And yes, I think that what I'm talking about now is not just something in the mind of an old man. I stood outside here of our Brahmakon, beautiful house and beautiful garden and surroundings, which is a rental facility for devotees with apartments. It's an apartment building with 12 apartments where devotees have been living, some of us, like myself and my sons, they are born here, and I had this, you know, apartment here since 25 years back. This is my home. And there are other, and some of us are aging, and feel that, wow, Krishna is so nice, so kind, taking care of us. Providing us with such a beautiful, nice home. Thank you, Krishna. Well, this is me talking, because this is what I'm saying over and over again. I'm so grateful to Krishna having allowed me to live like this and not in some heavy Stockholm suburb surrounded by well, you know what kind of people are out there. So well, nothing bad about people, but I like to, I appreciate to have devotees living around in the apartments. When our kids were born, and the neighbor couple also had a daughter, and the two mothers, they used even to share breast milk. Now, that's what I think it should be like here. It's an apartment building for devotees, for Vaishnavas. Only devotees of Krishna live here. And there's a little temple downstairs where we can meet and talk about Krishna, and it's just perfect. But then you got it from the other side. These, you know, big ISKCON leaders. And I heard, of course, generalizing heavily, but I have to say this because I think we have to admit there is this kind of mentality there, based on what I've been speaking about now. Yes, but there is this movement, and we have to have a temple here, and bring in many guests, and kirtan. And this devotee was standing there pointing at his house, where he also lives with his wife, saying we should just sell the whole place and get a kirtan hall and do big preaching. And but I said, what about us who live here? Well, they can find their own apartment somewhere else. And I mentioned it in another speech I gave here on my phone. It's not so easy. And again, it's as if the devotees living in those apartments here don't exist. It's as if they are just, again, the some possible resources if they help out with the important work, you know, our work, which I am, of course, in charge of, since I'm an advanced devotee and one of those up there. Well, I mean, that's the way the thinking is, admit it. Then maybe they will provide some service here, something useful. If they don't, they're useless. I don't think they're devotees anymore. Who cares? Let them take care of themselves. And well, since I'm into it, the neighbor here, I spoke about that in my previous recording too, an elderly lady who's been around the devotee for, I mean, since the 80s, I think. Well, she's my age, and she came to me and said, I have to move out from here. I'm moving back to my hometown. I can't stand it here. No one is renovating or maintaining my apartment. It's just a complete mess. And the one who lived there before couldn't close the door because the house cracked at that, just where that apartment is. I don't even want to look inside that apartment. But I've been in the one just above her, and I don't even want to think about it. And that's why, yes, I spoke, and I speak now also, I guess, to some couple of older godbrothers. We were bhaktas together in 78, 79. And can we just meet as people, not as these roles of organizational figures, just as devotees, just as those who came stepping in the temple there, and yes, let's help each other to build our Prabhupada's nice movement. Could you just meet like that and talk? And what I would want them to talk about is basically what I'm saying here, and I can't get it said. So I thought, if maybe just come down on the ground, take a walk in the forest, a few of us, and just talk as people do, as friends do. Maybe we're not even friends, but maybe we could become, I don't know. Because that's what devotees are supposed to be, right? So, well, I don't expect to pull people here and there and follow my directives, but so therefore I do what I generally do these days. I speak like this on my little phone, record, and sometimes make podcasts here on my channel. Yeah. And then see what happens. But I can just tell everyone else, all the those out there who, like me and like all of us, I think, simply want to be devotees of God and of the devotees who like to cook for the devotees and distribute and serve out prasadam. Yes. Go out there with the books and harinam and whatever. Music festivals among the youth. give out Krishna. And to our friends, and then live here peacefully our lives, hopefully close to other devotees, feeling protected and taken care of by Krishna, which we are. And that's the nice thing, that even if no one else is there, I can see it also from my devoted friends of my generation and later. Krishna takes care of us. And I think most of us can testify to that. So anyway, that's where I am now. And I'm not intending to step into any of those big positions up there. And I said, I offered to be a member of a team. And when I say that, that's what I mean. It's not a fine political trickery to get in charge of something. Yes, here is me and my team, and they do exactly what I tell them to. Some they do it that way. You know, we can, especially people who are ending up in this leadership position, politicians, we can look at it out there in society. They often do so because they are good at trickery and playing that political game to get what you want, right? So we've seen that in ISKCON. Maybe it's still there. But we have to be very careful, says now an old man here who's 70 in a couple of weeks. We have to be very careful so it doesn't turn into Vaishnava aparad. I mean, and I said it through the years, if I would have been responsible for this building in Brahmakund, I have to get a little straight here, and I have to say it because I can drop tomorrow anyway, so as I'm saying it again, that this building was built by a group of brahmacharis and grihastha, I mean, some very dedicated devotees working purely as devotional service, not getting anything for it, to basically build this entire house, renovate it with such, I would say, such devotion and dedication that I'm just looking at it, because I saw it looked before. I'm going, wow. So to me, this house is Krishna, and it's Krishna's devotee's house. And if I would have had this responsibility, if I would have been in that position of being responsible for this house, I would simply think, go around to the devotees here in the apartment, ask, what can I do for you? What can we do here? Are you happy? Is everything fine? It would be such a nice opportunity to render service to the Vaishnava devotees. But then sometimes, again, the thinking was that they are aspiring devotees. They are not really doing some. They are not serving my programs here and all that. So they are not real devotees, but, you know, it may also be that they cannot relate to you. So we are different, and that's also the next thing, to be tolerant and see that devotees, some are going this branch and that branch, and there are 64 branches of the Gaudiya mission tree. 65 with ISKCON or something, I guess there are more now, but it was in the beginning, and just can harmoniously coexist. And I am saying, And this is why I take the trouble and also get long like this. I guess no one is listening anymore or looking. Well, I hope someone is. Thank you for listening this far. That this is the mood. I've been thinking for years, what is it, this mood we had in the past? But we had it. I mean, me and my friends, especially the Sankirtan bands, we often spoke like that and we saw it like that. Let's see if we can get some opportunity to render service to the devotees. We almost battled about who can serve the other one. And I know sometimes it was just a manner, you know, something you were supposed to do. Then you are an advanced devotee. But we could also experience how happy and satisfying, and I guess satisfying to Krishna, it is when we do that. So you quickly get a taste, would she? You know, you quickly move on the path of Marga, or path of Bhakti Marga, because Krishna is happy. It just makes sense, right? So this devotee standing there, we should sell this house and all these people. Well, he said some of them are not devotees, they're just living here for some other students or traveling, or whatever. So I think this should be a house for devotees. There are so many other houses. But then he stands there and he says, no, we should sell this and get a big kirtan hall somewhere in Stockholm. We can have big kirtans. And I thought, I don't remember if I told him, but I had to maintain that hall. And where are we going to live? And are you going to use this rent on that too? And you have to buy it. It costs a lot of Stockholm. Rent, maintenance of that place. If you can't manage this place, how should you manage that place? And then the devotees are scattering in different directions because they're not anymore living here. I mean, to me it's obvious, but you know, that's the level where it can come to. And then one leader is out. And who's going to get in there now? Oh, I'll do it and sell the whole thing. And you never know. It becomes very arbitrary and random, the whole thing. And that's why I thought, hey, I have some experience with organization and building, so maybe I can help out some little corner here. But again, my life is just as me, an ordinary free Vaishnava, and I think we should all be. I saw some documentary or something the other day where they were talking like that, I think from India or whatever it was, that you should be free. People in the past, they were free. Of course, we think they were all slaves, but many were free. The farmers, way back, they were free. They had their land given by God, and they took care of themselves. Those we call indigenous people, living in their tents or yurts or coatis. They put up their home wherever they wanted, there with their reindeer and or buffalo or whatever, and horses and their families and relatives. Wherever they wanted, they were free. And we almost forgot that. And I would like to say the same with Vaishnava devotees of God. We're, a Vaishnava is free. That's the idea of it. It's called mukti, liberation. And Prabhupada said that, and Krishna says in the Shastra that liberation is just one step. Well, life begins for a Vaishnava. So a Vaishnava is liberated, is free. And yes, we are free to stay in this world, to go to another world, and free to do whatever we desire to do in this world. And of course, there are today, especially, big people sitting there in big positions with big money and big power and big influence over our minds through modern media. Who are trying to use us as, well, a herd of sheep or cows, I guess you can say. At least working for them. And this idea that we can be free, there is no one is free. I even heard that expression there among the devotees. No one is free. But I would say a healthy Vaishnava community, again, this is an old man summing up his life's experience and thoughts. A healthy Vaishnava community, this is my opinion and what I learned, is of that kind, is standing upon that platform of devotees, Vaishnavas, servants of Krishna, brotherhood, sisterhood. Getting closer to each other, as Prabhupada said it, being friends, supporting each other, if possible, living next to each other as neighbors. It's such a nice thing. And then coming together and doing nice projects for Krishna, for Prabhupada, for the Gaudiya mission, if we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas. It's just the way ideal forening non-profits work. I mean, and churches, they should work that way. Not a top-heavy pyramid where the bottom levels are serving the ones in the top, who are then the servants of God, the real ones, passing that service between God and the peasants down there. You know, in almost every reformation and I would say revolution against such religious institutions when they became too much like that has been about that. If you think about it, Martin Luther. No, each and every one of us can have our own personal relationship with God and doesn't have to only go through the Pope and cardinals and bishops and whatever. And so the Protestant Church was born in protest. And then the free churches, I spoke to some prominent figures in those Christian free churches here in Sweden, said that this is also why most of them came into existence. That your relationship to God is not only through the priest and bishop and state, but it's a personal relationship. And here in ISKCON we learn that your relationship to God is through the guru, who is then also represented by the other authorities that you should serve and work under and surrender to. Yeah, that was kind of at least underlying ideas back then. But now, the guru is Oma Gyanatimrasya, it's opening our eyes so we can have our own relationships with Krishna. Back again, remember again, wake up and see that relationship again. That's the role of the guru. Not just sitting there forever in between, passing the service that's made by all his or her disciples back and forth between them and God. I wouldn't want to be in such a position. So, well, that's my view on this. But yes, and that's what's going on anyway now, right? Most of us who were then serving in the temple, under the temple authorities, are now free devotees, which means some think that we're not devotees at all anymore because we're not in the movement. But again, I can testify friends I have and meeting, you know, I'm traveling around, I've been maybe again meeting devotees in the homes, which I find the nicest place to meet devotees in. Because then we can speak just as ourselves, be ourselves more. And then when I learn about the lives of these people, these devotees, I'm just so impressed. Fascinating, the life stories, which I also try to then, if you can get some help with that, publishing on Radio Krishna. This is my bhakti story. So yes, I mean, this is a long recording. I'm kind of summing up my life basically and my experiences up to now also. And you can maybe also understand a bit where I'm at this time. As we change, right? And I'm sure you have a different story now than back then also. I mean, if you were like my generation. But I think this is so important. And you know, for me, it doesn't matter that much. You see, I am and I have been for the past few months considering maybe I should get an apartment somewhere else in another town and just forget about all this. It's ISKCON and all of that. And yes, many have done so, and they tell me more or less, well, in more or less explicit words these days, that no, they have lost faith in ISKCON. Some even consider ISKCON dysfunctional. Some even take it further than that. So I think I'm speaking for a rather large probably the majority of devotees, if you take all of us who went through the temples through all these years. And again, some may think that we hardly exist. They hardly exist out there. They are ex-devotees. They are not the real ones. You know, the real ones are those of us who are left here, back here, holding the scepter high and struggling to maintain. But that's crumbling. And someone asked also me then, why is no one coming here want to be part of this? They don't come to the temple programs. These are the devotees living in Stockholm. Because that's what we were talking about here, and I think we find it elsewhere too. And it's an interesting question. Non-profit organizations in Sweden, they are generally financed together with the members who do it because they are part of it and they're part of deciding what the money will be used for. That's a beautiful system. And that's what we wanted to introduce here. I remember me, Mark and Darishi and others in the early 2000s. And still, I think this is the way it should go. And now we're getting into organizational talks. I can do that also, but that's not what I want to talk about today. But the big, important issues. So yeah, I thought I even had one apartment. I was second in line, so I had fairly big chance of getting it. And then I spoke to my sons and their mother and all that, and no, they didn't want to take over this apartment. And I felt I want to actually stay here. This is my home. This is the house of Krishna. This is where the devotees live. It's a beautiful area. And this is the birthplace of my sons. They can come back here. Even looking at the handles of the drawers in the kitchen, which are bent over from them trying to climb it when they were babies. You know, we have human life stories here. And that's what it's about. That's the reality here. We living beings, so some of us are trying not to be devotees of Krishna. Now, to be that. And have done a lot of service, to be fair, to Krishna and Prabhupada through the years. And even if we now are old and say, I've done mine, now I will just take it easy here and relax and rest, then that's fine, of course. And the relationship we have to God is just private. I cannot say anything about your relationship to Krishna, and you can't about mine unless we speak to each other and explain. So I would say it's a bit a way to go there, but it has to shift over from the organization in the center to the people. So I said that, if you want to sell this building and whatever, it's going to be filled with meat eaters and drinkers, and just the whole thing will probably be torn down, and some nice rich man's funky's house will be raised here because it's a high prestigious area, and they will be happy to get rid of this junky, crazy Krishna house. So yeah, Prabhupada said you build up and you tear down. But maintenance, that's sattva. And I've learned this much in my life working in companies that are well maintained, and maintaining my own companies, how important that is. It's easy to start up something, but to maintain, fix up a cool garden, take here some Czech guys, they're strong and they will do what I tell them, and look what a beautiful garden. But then maintaining it through the years is a different thing. So I'm saying that's what it's needed now, not just throwing it away because it didn't work. No, rather making it work by doing it right. Because otherwise you do another project and you will do it wrong also. Because it's not wrong with the project, it's wrong with the people doing it, right? Kind of common sense. So then, well, it just happened. I first got responsibility for the tool room and then for getting the rats out, which means we need to clean out the kitchen. So I'm working, we are a team here working to get permission from the president or whatever to clean out the kitchen and to have free hands doing it, because yeah, it's needed, big one, clean up. So we are waiting for permission for that. But I'm just saying all this. The reason I'm actually talking is, yes, I have feelings for this. I mean, this house, I'm ready to the extent I can at this age, serve this house and the devotees living here. Trying to do what I can to see them happy and everything nicely maintained and garden flourishing again, not being eaten up by a huge monster that used to be a little bush but now is thinks it is the world tree or something. So yes, there are many things we're discussing. And for me, that's a creative thing. Yes, we can make something beautiful. Let's make this beautiful and nice and clean and orderly and get some good, actually qualified carpenters in. I used to be good at finding them in my own house and they were temple in Gothenburg, get advice how to do it, find out the best ways to get it done at the lowest cost, and first of all spend the income from the rents for that. Being accountable, accountability, credibility, you know, all that. And this place could be beautiful. And I see. I mean, from my experience here, what I know about houses and things, that it could be done, it could be fixed up without unrealistic, dreamy measures with what we have. And a few of us have started even talking about this, and yes, I think we can do it. And the reason I'm talking this again is also that I care, because I'm also living here myself. This is my home. And yes, I'm older now, just as the lady next door. And I know too much about what's going on, you know, things actually have been managed and going on up there in the leadership levels. And it's because I've sat there 7 years or so and been around since the old days. So yes, that can make you a little worried, you know. What are we going to see now? Who's going to take over here now? Someone who has no idea about how things are done in Sweden or any experience of buildings or anything, but who happened to have a good political position in the, you know, the usual old thing, being the new leader. Which I said, and I say explicitly, I'm not going to be that. I'm going to be a member. I volunteer to be a member of a team. And if I have to take a leadership position initially to get that team working, I'm ready to do so. But I will, while shouldering that responsibility that I take on myself, try, I mean, naturally due to my age, to gradually shift that work over to younger, stronger people. Nice devotees. So just so you know. But that's the reason I wanted just to talk like this. When I asked a couple of you to, why don't you come up here, we can take some walks, you can have a little weekend off, and at the same time you can meet with the current board here, which, to be honest, when I speak to the voters in the house, hardly anyone seems to know who is in that board. Well, one or two are identified, but it doesn't seem to be very active, as usual, you know. And therefore I thought, we need to talk. Those oldies, we who have had ample experience now, both with buying, renovating and selling buildings. For me, it's been two of them. Running companies, organizations, serving as temple presidents and this and that. BBT bosses and Sankirtan leaders or in this Prabhupada's movement. But maybe we should just, you know, take a walk together and talk like normal people. Relax, have a couple of hours for each other. You know, that's the way friends do sometimes, isn't it? So anyway, that's all. Thank you very much for listening. Hare Krishna.